Welcome to the Polygamer Podcast, where gaming is for everyone. Join us as we expand the boundaries of the gaming community.
Hello and welcome to Polygamer Podcast episode number 74 for Wednesday, January 17th, 2018. Happy New Year. I am your host, Ken Gagne, and here to kick off a new year of the Polygamer Podcast is guest Joseph Bine, president and creative lead of Out of Sight Games. Hello, Joseph.
Hi, Ken.
How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being had. I hope you had a peaceful holiday season.
Peace is hard to come by when you've just released your first game, but it was good. It was a very good holiday season.
I can just imagine how frantic you were coming down to the wire of the launch of your first game, A Hero's Call. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. It's been pretty incredible.
Now, you said this is your first game. What is your history or experience, if any, with game development?
Personally, actually none other than this project. The engine developer, Ian Reed, who is amazing, by the way, he has done some development of smaller scale audio games in the past. But when he reached out to me asking if I'd like to work with him on a project he was thinking about, that was my introduction to the crazy world of game development.
So were you one of the developers? Did you bring yourself up to speed by teaching yourself programming, or did you have other contributions to make?
Yeah, so Ian pretty quickly discovered that it wasn't going to be very efficient for him to take all of my ideas and implement them himself, because that's really what he wanted. He wanted an idea man. So he started teaching me the rudiments of programming, and that led to really me learning from him and then teaching myself, as I'd say, oh, well, now I want to do this. Well, let's see if I can figure out how to do that. Probably led to a bunch of really messy, terrible code that any respectable programmer would look at and weep. But yeah, that's I guess that's kind of how it went.
Well, you know, being able to reuse code makes it very important to get it right the first time. Mm. But sometimes for your first time, you just got to get it done.
Yeah. And I would often, you know, if I had something I knew could be done, but I wasn't positive how to do it, I'd go and find somewhere that Ian was already doing it and say, oh, that's how you do it. And then, you know.
You learn from the best.
Yep.
How long did it take you to create this game? I know your Kickstarter ran just 1 year ago.
Yeah. We really started talking in, I want to say, June of 2013. So it's been about 4.5 years.
Wow.
Now, granted, I mean, that's weekends and evenings, but still, it's been a long road.
So, like many indie developers, this is something you're doing on the side.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gotcha. So your Kickstarter ran a year ago. You're already about 3.5 years into the game development.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, what were you looking for funding for at that point?
At that point, really, our one goal was to raise funding to be able to hire some voice actors to voice the dialogue of the game. That's something that blind gamers haven't had yet, is a game with a really, you know, character and story driven game with fully voiced dialogue. And that was one of the few things that we couldn't do on a shoestring budget, right? There's only so much of their time and a talent that you can ask artists like that to donate.
So how would you describe this game? I've seen it online. It's called a fantasy-themed turn-based strategy RPG. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's a fair descriptor. Really, it is, I would say, a spiritual successor to a lot of your sort of classic console fantasy RPGs. So it's got the turn-based combat like you'd find in Japanese RPGs on, you know, the Nintendo or whatnot, but then featuring first-person exploration through a dynamic but living game world. So Some accessible RPGs that have been made before would be more of what you'd think of as a you know, procedurally generated dungeon crawlers, that sort of thing. Whereas A Hero's Call really is, you're dropped into a world that already exists, and you're going to role play your way through it.
Now, you've mentioned the word accessible, and that's something we've talked about on this show before with guests from Able Gamers and Special Effect. But for those who have missed those episodes, roughly what is accessibility in gaming?
Absolutely, yeah. So I guess in the simplest terms, accessibility in gaming would be ensuring that players with any degree of physical or cognitive ability are able to have a full and rewarding experience with your game. Our initial focus with Out of Sight Games is accessibility for the blind. Specifically, this is a game that can be played and currently must be played without any graphics, purely through audio.
So how does it work to make a game for audio only? How does a game like that get played? What sort of inputs does one person use, or what sort of signals can the game convey?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a variety of techniques that can be used, and that really depends on the game and the needs of the game. In our case, some of that is handled by audio cues provided by the game specifically to alert players, say, to changes in terrain. So if I'm walking along a wall and then there's an opening to my right, I'm going to hear a sound off to my right that indicates there's that opening or there's a door. Text to speech, so conversion of on-screen text into spoken text that's read by Sappy or by a screen reader. And then just creating a soundscape with auditory landmarks, things that players can orient themselves to as they're exploring and listen to those things in the soundscape and use those navigationally. Those really, I'd say, are the main factors for us.
Sounds like a game that's best played wearing headphones.
It is, though, unlike some audio games that have been released in the past, especially some of the better ones, I would say, released for mobile devices, you can actually play A Hero's Call without headphones. Most of what you need is stereo. So long as you're playing with a stereo speaker setup, you can do fine. The game also sounds, if I say so myself, pretty killer in 5.1 surround.
I'll have to keep an eye out for some Dolby headsets. You talked about how you have voice actors for the dialogue, but this is a strategy game, and usually strategies involve, in my experience, a lot of clicking, a lot of menu-driven action. How do you replicate that without visuals?
Yeah, so currently all of the menus are voiced by a text-to-speech engine. If users have a screen reader that is compatible, then they can use their preferred screen reader. If they don't, Windows has a Sappy engine that is built into Microsoft that provides text-to-speech. So the computer will essentially read out that text to you. For sighted gamers, that can be pretty disconcerting, not being used to listening to Sappy. And, you know, it's that robot voice that nobody's quite happy with. But for blind gamers, I mean, that's really very, very little difference between that for them and simply reading text on a screen for you.
And what is Sappy?
What is it? I think it stands for Speech API. It's essentially Microsoft's default text-to-speech engine.
So this is used by something like JAWS, for example?
Yeah, JAWS wouldn't use Sappy. JAWS would use a different voice synthesizer. Sappy would be what if you activate Narrator on Windows, which is the built-in screen reader in Windows. Sappy would be the voice engine that's being used.
Gotcha. Okay. What was your motivation to focus on making a game specifically for this audience?
Ian, the engine developer, and myself are both blind. We actually both grew up sighted and grew up playing mainstream games and thoroughly enjoying them. And then we both lost our vision to the point that we can't engage with that medium anymore. And because of our experience, we were both a little jaded about the state of accessible games, which is not to diminish what certain developers of accessible gaming have done, but we wanted more. You know, we wanted to get closer to what we had experienced before, and we wanted to let people who hadn't ever had that experience experience something of it.
And so that's why we wanted to focus on blind gamers. I mean, honestly, it's so that we could make a game that we could play too.
Are there kinds of games that work better for this kind of accessibility than others? Like, I'm not speaking from experience, but I would guess, for example, a 2D fighter like Street Fighter would be challenging.
Actually, 2D fighters are probably the most popular mainstream game among blind gamers. They're, in fact, some blind competitive gamers of 2D fighters. And the reason being that everything in a 2D fighter is represented in a stereo field acoustically, and most 2D fighters have unique audio cues for different moves. So if you're really good enough, you can tell someone doing a high punch, a low kick, based on their vocal sounds. And so 2D games in general, side scrollers, fighters, that sort of thing, tend to be what you see the most of in games made specifically for the blind, because it's the easiest to pick out something from the audio soundscape. If it's just, am I going to my left? Am I going to my right? 3D is the challenge for purely audio driven gaming, just because human beings aren't particularly good at detecting height through sound, so it's difficult to represent that in a non-visual way.
Yeah, I can imagine that games like Overwatch, Call of Duty, etc., now that you describe it that way, would not translate very well.
Yeah, and some of those games have a little bit of what I like to call accidental accessibility, which is when a good detailed sound design provides an accessibility opening. For example, I've never played or attempted to play Overwatch, but I know some blind gamers who do. I don't know how well they do. I expect navigating is a challenge because of the nature of the maps. But one thing I have heard is, for example, in, I think it's Overwatch, every unit or every team has distinct footsteps. So you can actually tell by the sound of a unit's feet who they are and whether or not you need to be shooting them. Interesting things like that. But in terms of actually navigating the map, yes, that's far more of a challenge, which is part of the reason that 2D fighters enjoy a decent bit of success with blind gamers, is because you don't have to worry about navigating a map. You're just going back and forth, left to right.
How do you tell if a game is likely to be accessible other than just trying it?
Sadly, that's about all you can do. Sometimes you learn from experience. You know, if you know what the game is about, that's something that's been an ongoing topic of discussion among those in the gaming industry who are advocates of game accessibility, is how do we, is there a way to create standardized accessibility ratings similar to how a game might have an ESRB rating? That's a challenge, though, because often accessibility is—it's not cut and dry. It's situationally dependent, and there aren't a lot of simple checkboxes you can check. Is all menu text read in an auditory manner? That's an easy checkbox. Is the game able to be played if you're colorblind? That's an easy checkbox. Does the game have remappable controls for people with motor disabilities? That's an easy checkbox. But other things, like, can you effectively navigate the map by sound? Well, what do you mean by effectively navigate? So sadly, right now, really, just trying out the game really is the only opportunity.
I would think being able to navigate a 3D world by sound would not be a consequence of accidental accessibility. That's something that developers need to consciously think about.
Very much so, yes. And it's best thought about from the ground up. It's much easier to create an accessible game if you're thinking as you build it, is there something we could do a little bit differently here to make this accessible non-visually, or accessible if you have a motor impairment, or accessible if you can't hear, versus going in afterwards, learning your game was inaccessible and saying, well, can we fix it? Can we change it? Usually at that point, it's too late.
So it's not a matter of just adding to the configuration screen some sort of a colorblind mode or remappable controls. It's really something they need to think about early on.
Right. And some of those things can be added in afterwards, and really anything helps. A really great example, NetherRealm Studios. I mentioned there are some competitive blind gamers, and one one gamer was actually at a tournament for the game Injustice, Gods Among Us, and got to dialogue with the developers, and they went back, and I believe this may have been the first accessibility mode in a AAA studio release, so the first specific accessibility toggle for blind gamers. And it was a very simple thing. They just added in a little audio cue that would play when you were near an interactable element of the map, because there wasn't any auditory feedback for that in the game. Really small thing, but a huge deal for blind Injustice gamers. So that can be done. But it's definitely better to do that and to do it organically and to do it in a way that honors the vision of the creative team if you're thinking about it from the start.
That's a great example. I mean, that's a very small thing that can mm-hmm. be added, but it's something that they hadn't thought about. And once they realized, they were able to go back and add it and expand their audience.
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, it's a toggle. You turn it off, it's not getting in anybody else's way. And you turn it on, and suddenly there are people who can engage more fully with the game and be on more even footing with the rest of gamers, especially in a competitive setting.
Could you give me another example of a game that our listeners might know that is a good example of being accessible?
Accessible for what audience in particular? Visually or non-visually accessible, or just another good accessibility story?
In this context, let's talk about visual accessibility.
All right.
Like, what are some games that you really enjoy?
You know, the reality is I people ask me what games I play, and I say besides A Hero's Call, because I don't find myself having time to play. There are a couple of iOS games, I believe they were for Android as well, from a developer called Something Else. And these games weren't originally designed with the intent of being for blind gamers, but they were designed as audio-only games. The games were called Papa Sangre, Papa Sangre 2, and The Night Jar. And they were a sort of audio horror experience. Really, really fantastic games in terms of sound design, in terms of the way they sort of engross you in a story. I think those games may be getting discontinued. I'm not positive. I think I remember reading something about that, which would be really tragic if they are. But that's another really good example.
I know with the recent update to iOS 11, hundreds of thousands of apps broke. I'd hate to hear if those were some of them.
It would be. It'd be a shame. Plus, I mean, in The Night Jar, the narrator is Benedict Cumberbatch. In Papa Sangre 2, you get to talk with Sean Bean. I mean, you can't go wrong with that.
Wow, that's an impressive lineup.
Yeah, they have higher profile voice actors than we do.
Well, you know, your first Kickstarter was 10,000. Next time, go for 100,000.
That's right.
Interactive fiction or text adventure games made with Twine or Inform, those are probably pretty accessible.
Yes. Text adventures, game books, that sort of thing are very popular among blind gamers for that exact reason.
And iOS, does it have a text-to-speech converter built in?
Yes, it does. In fact, I believe every Apple device does come out of the box with a fully featured screen reader. I think that's true of every Microsoft device now as well, which is a good thing.
Have there been any games that we talked about how you need to just try a game to find out if it's accessible? But did you go into any games with the expectation that this game should be accessible, and you ended up being disappointed?
Personally, I haven't had that experience. I expect that it's an experience that... oh, no, you know what? Actually, that's not true. And I'm going to cycle back to iOS, just because by nature of the way that Apple does their UI, if you use the tools they give you, often games can be accessible without the developer intending it. So sometimes I'll come across something and go, oh, I should try this out. And we were at the Game Developers Conference or convention, whatever GDC stands for, this last year, and heard about a game, and my wife became immediately addicted to it. It was called Reigns. We'd actually been at a presentation by the developer. Very simple little, they call it a binary choice RPG. So essentially the game is just presented through, you have a series of scenarios or people from your kingdom
come up and ask you questions, and you just choose one of two options, yes or no, usually. And so I thought to myself, well, goodness gracious, there's no reason this game couldn't be accessible. Just give me, you know, have the text of the question and the text of the selections exposed to the screen reader, and tried it out. And sadly, the interface, since they were using a custom graphic interface, just didn't expose anything to the screen reader, which was a bummer.
Oh, that's too bad. Were you able to bring that up to the developer's attention?
I didn't get a chance to engage with them personally. I actually kept an eye out. Well, I didn't keep an eye out. My wife kept an eye out for them the rest of the time that we were there, and we never saw anybody. But we did. We did shoot them a tweet and an email. I don't remember if we got any response. But I don't think anything ever came of it.
We talked about Twine and Inform, and then you just mentioned that this game, Reigns, was using a custom engine. What engine did you use for A Hero's Call?
The engine for A Hero's Call was built from the ground up. Yeah, see, people say, wow, what they should say is, oh, I'm so sorry. that's led to more headaches than we would have liked to have. But unfortunately, when we started the project, there really wasn't any major game engine that was even remotely accessible for a blind developer. And so for Ian to do what Ian wanted to do, he really just had to build it from the ground up. I believe there may be some plugins now that bring some screen reader accessibility into Unity. I'm not positive about that because that's really not my department. But yeah, we haven't named it yet, but once the engine has a name, then I can tell you what engine we used.
So I was going to ask you, for developers who want to make visually accessible games, what engine do you recommend? But it doesn't sound like there is one that's recommended other than Unity with plugins.
Yeah, well, if it's a sighted developer, they can really use whatever engine they want. I know that Microsoft makes it very easy to interface with things like Sappy for having text spoken. And like we discussed, if you just think about sort of universal accessibility from a design perspective from the beginning, how do we build accessibility into our soundscape? How do we build accessibility into our control scheme? So forth and so on. That can be done in any engine. The challenge is when the developer himself or herself has a disability and doesn't have access to the tools that are needed. That's when it becomes difficult to actually make the project.
Oh, I hadn't even considered that the engine might be able to output accessible games, but not make it accessible. The engine itself might not be accessible.
That's exactly right. Because, for example, if you have an engine that has an interface that developers need to use in order to do what they want to do, and that interface is inaccessible, then the end user with the disability can't use that engine. But the engine may be able to say, oh, look, we're going to call out to text-to-speech in our game and, you know, hook into this API, and boom, now our game is self-voicing. Well, that's easy to do in most modern game engines.
Are there certain platforms that are... Well, now I have the question about both development and playing, but as far as being a gamer goes, we have console, desktop, mobile, VR. Are some platforms more likely to have accessible games than others?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like I said, iOS is a good bet because of the way that Apple's interface works with the screen reader. Microsoft has done some really great stuff with the Xbox and accessibility. The Xbox now ships with a fully featured screen reader as well, so its UI is completely accessible. And I think as time goes on, we're going to start seeing more accessible games available on that platform. Microsoft has recently made it possible and hopefully easy for developers to hook into their text-to-speech capabilities. So rather than developers having to figure out how to make the game their own games self-voicing, they just have to call out to what Microsoft has already done. And just having menus voiced by text-to-speech is a huge step in accessibility. Blind gamers I tell you what, they'll muddle through a lot if there's a glimmer of accessibility. But other than that, in terms of just what is available for different platforms, I don't know that there's any platform that's specifically more likely at present. I think it'll be interesting in the coming years as the buzz about game accessibility kind of starts to ramp up, it'll be interesting to see if somebody steps out as a front runner.
When the Wii came out, I know motion controls had a lot of implications for physically disabled gamers or studios like Able Gamers, and I'm concerned that the move to VR and Oculus Rift and PSVR might have similar issues for visually accessible gamers.
It's an interesting mixed bag. On the one hand, you're absolutely right. There are tremendous accessibility challenges with a new medium like that. On the other hand, the move toward VR has re-energized interest in really good spatial audio, because if you're in a virtual world, things need to sound like they're coming from where they are in the game world, which has huge implications for advantages for non-visual accessibility. And there is, you know, there is talk in the industry. This issue is becoming more and more visible and more talked about. Last year was the first year of the Game Accessibility Conference, which took place concurrent with GDC. And they're doing it again this next year. And I know that at GDC last year, and I believe at Game Accessibility Conference and GDC this coming year, there are some talks about accessibility in VR. So it's definitely something that people are thinking about.
And what has prompted that watershed moment where this is finally becoming something that people are thinking and talking about?
There are some really incredible people in this industry who have been advocating the cause of disabled gamers for a long time and putting a lot of themselves into it. And I think, somebody put it to me this way at GDC last year. He said, when you're steering a ship, like one of those great big sailing ships, think like a pirate ship or whatever, you see the guy turning the wheel, and he's just spinning the wheel and spinning the wheel and spinning the wheel, and it doesn't look like the ship's moving at all, but he has to keep spinning that wheel. But then once the ship starts to turn, there's no stopping it. And he said he feels like that's what's happening with accessibility in gaming. The people have been spinning the wheel and spinning the wheel and spinning the wheel, and the rudder is finally starting to turn.
That's a great metaphor, and it's also very encouraging and optimistic.
It is. You know, we went from a couple years ago where you had maybe one or two little talks at GDC about accessibility, and they were like, you know, the small talks from the small fish. Last year at GDC, you had talks about different areas of accessibility, whether that's visual accessibility or accessibility for gamers with motor impairments or auditory accessibility. You had talks from players like EA and Sony and Microsoft. So there's definitely a change in the temperature when it comes to accessibility in gaming. There's a long way to go. There's a very long way to go. And part of that is just because it's such a big, complex, difficult thing. But that tide feels like it is moving.
And would you characterize these big studios as making the moral decision to do the right thing and make their games more accessible?
The cynic in me says, well, no, they're just trying to expand their user base. But as I've engaged with some people from these studios, I got, I've spoken to people when I was at GDC last year. I got the chance to interact with some people involved with accessibility at Microsoft and at EA, some other areas. The reality is the people who are pushing this, they're so passionate, and they are pouring so much more into this than the company is ever going to get out in terms of, you know, wider market. They're doing it because they care, and they're doing it because it's important, and they're doing it because they love games and they love gaming, and they hate the idea that there are people who can't access that.
I mean, I love that response, that there are people who are passionate about this. They may have some personal connection, or their lives may be touched or affected by it in ways that we don't know about. But at the end of the day, it is also, as you mentioned, still a business.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a good business. I mean, it's a good business move. You can look at the numbers of people with disabilities, and there's this vast market out there of people who aren't buying your game because they can't play it. And as Americans get older, well, not just Americans. I mean, it's not just an American thing. as people get older, and you look at the number of age-related disabilities, and we're starting to see a lot more older gamers because people who grew up as gamers are now getting older. Those gamers are going to need accessibility considerations if they're going to continue gaming.
And for developers who want to expand their audience and make their games accessible, especially from a visual aspect, what sort of advice do you give to developers who want to do that?
Talk to disabled people and find out what they want and what they need. You mentioned Able Gamers before. Able Gamers is an awesome resource. You know, any local disability advocacy organizations are going to be a good resource to get developers in contact with actual real human beings. When it comes to blind gamers, audiogames.net is a great place to interact with blind gamers and hear their stories and hear what they want and need. And it's always, I tell you what, it's always so encouraging when sighted developers post on audiogames.net and say, hey, I'm new to this whole accessibility thing, help me figure it out. And I can't say enough about Game Accessibility Conference. That is, I think, going to be a huge thing for the movement of game accessibility. And if people want to learn more about how they can make their games more accessible, why they should make their games more accessible, what goes into that, that's a one-day conference, right? The Monday of the week of GDC, that's an awesome thing. And you get to rub elbows with lots of neat people. So those are some places people can start.
Excellent. I'll put links to all those in the show notes. Now, before we wrap up, I want to circle back around and talk some more about your own game, Heroes Call. How has it done since it was released?
It's doing really well. It's a difficult question to answer just because we don't have much of a bar to measure it against with it being our first release. And
it's the best game you've ever released?
It's the best game we've ever made. It's done better than anything we've ever made before. But people love it. Man, you know, it's one thing to make a game you're proud of, and that you can enjoy and that you think people will enjoy. But I tell you what, there aren't probably many developers who will have the experience of reading, you know, multiple emails saying I've literally been waiting my entire life to play a game like this. I've wanted an experience like this as long as I can remember. That's, I don't think you can put a price on that. And I mean, don't get me wrong, our release, it's our first release, and it's had its share of bumps, and there's still some stability issues we're hunting down. It's amazing how much you find once your player base multiplies exponentially. But stuff like that just makes it all worth it.
Yeah, I can imagine. And there's still places for this game to go, because as I understand, version 1.0 was audio only, but the next one won't be.
That's absolutely right. You know, we're trying to put our money where our mouth is and say if we're gonna say that accessibility is important, and that developers shouldn't exclude one audience, we don't want to do that either by making a game that only blind gamers can play. You know, right now, a sighted gamer with ears that work can play the game, but there are a lot of hurdles for sighted gamers who aren't used to getting information all through audio. That's just a lot to process. Requires a lot of mental map building. You've got to deal with listening to text to speech, which drives a lot of sighted gamers crazy. So we want to lower those hurdles for sighted gamers who might want to enjoy what we've done. Because honestly, I think the game is well worth playing for anyone with the story and the just incredible voice cast we've got and the sound design that is out of this world. So we want to make it accessible for that audience. We want to add graphics to the point that a deaf gamer could play it if they wanted to. We really want to get to the point that we can say this is as close as possible to a universally accessible game.
Will you need to hire some sort of an accessibility consultant in order to add the visual component?
We've got a couple of... Outside Games is a four-person team currently, two of those team members are sighted, one of whom we brought on board specifically because we knew that we were going to be moving toward implementing graphics, and that was something that we weren't going to be able to do without a sighted programmer. As we go on, we definitely will probably be engaging with other people as we try to, you know, make that the best it can be.
And what about distribution? It looks like this game is being sold through your own online store, but not Steam and the like?
Not at present, no. We didn't want to pursue distribution methods like that until we had the game in essentially its final form. And the reality is most blind gamers prefer not to purchase through Steam. I guess there are some accessibility issues with the interface, but... eventually, we would love to get it up on marketplaces like Steam and itch.io and stuff like that. We've discussed and are continuing to look into console releases. The ID at Xbox program is amazing. That's independent developers at Xbox, and we'd love to work with them and get the game available on Xbox eventually. All of that's really up in the air right now. We've got a lot of stuff to figure out now that we're sort of debriefing after the initial release. We've got a lot of stuff to figure out and figure out where we go from here.
Since you developed your own engine for this game, does that make it more difficult to port to other platforms?
Sadly, yes. And that's one of the reasons I lament the lack of accessible tools for disabled developers, because it's not like disabled developers don't have enough hurdles to overcome in the first place. They don't need more. And it is, you know, if we developed the game in Unity, we could pretty much package it up and send it over to Xbox and say, hey, we want to, you know, put this game on Xbox, and we won't have to do anything to it. Whereas now, if we do want to port it to other platforms, it's going to require a good bit of revision of the engine architecture, as I understand it.
So with that in mind, and everything else that's happened in the last 4.5 years while you created your first game, what are some of the lessons you've learned, things that you would do differently with your next game?
Yeah, you know, a lot of the lessons we've learned actually are things we wouldn't do differently. Just being, frankly, really stubborn, and not giving up, and not getting overwhelmed with the enormity of the task. Our engine developer could tell you, spend a whole day telling you about lessons he's learned in terms of just programming decisions and decisions that were made as he was building the engine and as it kind of evolved, that he said if he was going back and building it from the ground up again, he'd do differently. Those are all over my head, so I can't speak to them. If we had the opportunity to start anew and we had access to more mainstream development tools, like an engine like Unity, for example, in a heartbeat, we would do that. Using a engine made from scratch definitely was a crime of necessity.
It sounds like it's something you don't regret, because hopefully that will become a tool that you can make available to others as well.
That's the hope, yeah. And it's definitely not something we regret, because I don't think none of this would have happened but for the road we walked. I think we walked that path about as well as we could have given the circumstances, and we're pretty thrilled with the result.
And you're also happy with the Kickstarter experience?
The Kickstarter experience was one of the most exhilarating and humbling experiences of my life, honestly. We were overwhelmed by the response. Blind gamers are they're an incredible community. They're very hungry, you know, because they have access to so little. But they've also been burned a few times by Kickstarters that got funded and never got produced, or by people who said, we're working on this game and we're going to release it soon. And then, you know, 6 years later, the game still isn't out. And having walked that road now, I totally understand how those things can happen. There are some things we had to go through that I'm amazed that we made it. But all that said, we didn't know, you know, are they going to be skeptical? Are they going to be enthusiastic? And from, I think we met our initial funding goal within like 28 hours. And that kind of set the tone for the rest of the campaign, which then set the tone for the attitude of the community towards what we're doing for the last year. So it's been pretty incredible.
Excellent. I'm glad that was such a positive experience and that people turned out to support such a worthy game.
We are too.
And finally, I would be remiss to not acknowledge the individual who introduced us, that being Adrian Kuzminski. How do you know her?
Adrian is awesome. How do we know Adrian? She knew, our sound designer knew her from somewhere, some game sound meetup or something. And Adrian is a huge advocate for accessibility in gaming, specifically accessibility through sound and sound design. I had the pleasure of finally meeting her in person at GDC last year. And she's just been a huge, huge ally of what we're doing and supporting us and encouraging us and hyping the game in her circles. And she actually has a credit in the game too. She did some, we contracted her to do some voiceover processing, which was a huge thing when you've got the number of lines that we were dealing with. So yeah, Adrian is pretty awesome. And honestly, when I talked earlier about the people in the industry who are putting so much of themselves into spinning that wheel and getting the ship to turn, Adrian is right up there with them.
Oh, excellent. There'll be a link in the show notes to her website, smashclay.com. And also, I think you may have attended her game accessibility conference talk called Breaking the Sound Barrier, How Game Audio Can Improve Accessibility.
Yes. In fact, we were pleasantly surprised with a shout out in that talk. Didn't know that was going to happen, but she's getting right to the end of it. And she's like, "And this game's just got funded, and keep an eye out for this." We're like, "Oh, hey, I've heard of that game."
Wonderful. I'll also include a link to her talk because it's now up on YouTube.
Yeah, it's well worth checking out.
Fantastic. So there is so much more we could talk about accessibility and game development. Is there anything we overlooked that simply must be included here?
Probably. It's such a big thing. Just in thinking about A Hero's Call, there are so many people to thank, and I wouldn't even know where to start. Everybody who's been involved in this project, from the voice actors to our sound designer, is a legend. The man is incredible. The community of blind gamers, the community of sighted gamers who have taken interest in what we're doing and are supporting it. Everybody involved. But I guess at the end of the day, it's just people need to talk about this. People need to know that there are gamers out there who are blind, and there are gamers out there who are deaf, and there are gamers out there with motor disabilities, and they want to play games. And they don't just want to play games that are, you know, little something or other that somebody threw together quickly and cheaply for them. They want to play the same games that you're playing, and they want to share that experience with you. And the more people realize that, and the more people have conversations about that, I think the faster we're going to see that become a reality.
I hope to see that happen, and I hope that podcasts like this can help make it happen. So remind our listeners where they can find you and your wonderful games online.
Yeah, absolutely. They can find just about anything they need to know at www.outofsightgames.com. They can also follow us on Twitter at @outofsightgames, all of those words beginning with a capital letter. Yeah, those are really the two best options. The game can be purchased directly from outofsightgames.com.
Fantastic. And there'll be links to all those in the show notes at polygamer.net. Joseph Bine, president and creative lead of Out of Sight Games, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to chat with you.
This has been Polygamer, a GameBits production. Find more episodes, read our blog, or send feedback at polygamer.net.